Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, January 18th, 2018. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals and a Disney-featured stroller vendor. Today on the podcast, we're welcoming a new guest, Michael Tai, who had a nice long stay recently at Walt Disney World. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hello, Aaron. Hello, listeners.
So, let's see. Just to give people a broad rundown here, you were down long enough that you got to celebrate New Year's Eve at Walt Disney World and hang out with the Diz Dads Club convention and run the Run Disney Dopey Challenge, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I think we were down for 11 days total.
All right. And so let's start with the kind of origins of the trip. I always like to talk about the planning stages at least a little bit. You are a regular Walt Disney World visitor that time of year. So when did the plans for this year's trip start coming together?
Actually, it came together about April of 2017 when we actually signed up for the Dopey Challenge. The reason we actually signed up for it, and it's something we had been in the process of thinking about for like the last two or so years, but the way the marathon weekend actually fell with New Year's weekend and with our jobs, there was only a three-day break between New Year's Eve and the beginning of the Walt Disney World Marathon. So it actually worked out this year, whereas usual, most typical marathon weekends are at least a week to 10 days after the New Year.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, for a lot of people, this year's marathon weekend, the way it fell, there was grousing about it because it was going to conflict, right? It was going to be right up against New Year's, and it made the crowds bigger and all of that. And so folks were complaining about it a little bit, but for you guys, it was perfect because it opened up an opportunity that you wouldn't have had otherwise, which is to combine a New Year's Eve celebration at Walt Disney World with the Run Disney event.
Absolutely.
And you kind of, you know, maximized it, I guess, by splitting your stay. We've talked about that a little bit before, but in your case, you split it between two different DVC resorts. You're DVC owners, as I recall.
Yes, we are.
What made you choose these particular resorts? You started in the sort of freshly refurbished rooms in the Boulder Ridge Villas over at Wilderness Lodge, and then you finished up in the Beach Club Villas, so kind of opposite sides of property. How did you choose those two locations?
Wilderness Lodge has always been a favorite of ours ever since we bought it back in 2000. We haven't had an opportunity really to stay there recently, and we were really just looking for somewhere that we could be close to the Magic Kingdom with some really good transportation, and we knew it was going to be crowded, and the Wilderness transportation to the Magic Kingdom is, other than at Bay Lake Tower where you can walk, is probably the next best option to get to the Magic Kingdom easily when it's very crowded.
So yeah, people forget sometimes about how convenient that boat is. And I think that the best part really is that the boat service this time, you know, that time of year in January is great. I think sometimes we get frustrated with it in the fall because it'll shut down when you get lightning storms, but those are so rare in this time of year, you know, January, February, that you really get to capitalize on the full benefit there.
Oh yeah. It was, I think the longest we waited for a boat was maybe 10 to 12 minutes, and the travel time to the Magic Kingdom is maybe 5 to 7 minutes at maximum. And because of the crowd and because of the volume of people they had at the Magic Kingdom, they were running the large launches and the small launches out of Wilderness directly to the Magic Kingdom. So they were really running at pretty optimal capacity.
Very nice. Very nice. And so you started at Wilderness Lodge. And so I assume you celebrated New Year's Eve sort of from Wilderness Lodge?
We actually did. We spent the New Year's Eve at the Magic Kingdom because we knew the Magic Kingdom would be at capacity early on New Year's Eve. And so just so that we could witness the Fantasy in the Sky 360 fireworks.
Sure.
Which, if you've never had an opportunity to see them live, they're a must-do if you have an opportunity to do it. They are the most impressive fireworks I think we have ever seen at the Magic Kingdom, period.
Wow, very cool.
It literally lights up the entire sky. It feels like daylight. And then the next day we actually went to Epcot for the actual New Year's Eve celebration.
So you got to catch two different New Year's Eve, fireworks displays, basically, because they do essentially the same display on New Year's Eve that they do on New Year's Eve itself.
Correct.
So you got to see both. Now, Had you seen either of those displays? It sounded like you hadn't seen the Magic Kingdom New Year's fireworks before. Had you seen the Epcot New Year's fireworks before?
No. Both of them were actually new to us. We intentionally kind of put ourselves in a little YouTube blackout, so we weren't looking at them.
No spoilers.
Exactly. We wanted to, you know, experience, you know, the entire event as it was brand new. It's kind of like when Pandora opened and Flight of Passage opened. We did not want to know about it until we actually set foot on the ride.
Okay. Okay. So you got to see both. I want to ask two different questions, but I think they're kind of related. So the first question is, having seen both now, which of the displays did you like better and why?
Oh, that is hard. I would actually say the Magic Kingdom's display, I think, is actually better just because there's a no poor vantage point for the Magic Kingdom anywhere, you know, towards the castle in any of those courtyard areas. As long as you're not close to any building, that 360-degree fireworks is just incredible. But it leads to a problem is getting off of the Magic Kingdom after the fireworks.
Oh, wait, now you're getting ahead because this is the follow-up question. First, which one was better? Second of all, how did you manage the logistics, really, of watching both of them? And when you took the logistics into account as well, you know, which one was kind of more difficult to access?
Let me put it this way. Anytime anybody goes to New Year's Eve at Walt Disney World, whether it be Epcot or at the Magic Kingdom, you can expect the largest crowd you have ever seen at the theme park ever. At Walt Disney World, you had One Direction traffic. You were allowed to go only up Main Street. You could not go the opposite direction. The cast members would literally turn you around and take you towards the opposite exits. The alternate exits that are behind Main Street exit you from the park. So there's only one way in and one way out. At Epcot, once you hit the World Showcase, you had two-way traffic that had cast members down the middle of it. And if you tried to veer into the other lane, they would shoo you back and to your lane. And the only way, it was like playing Frogger is the best way to put it, to get into some of the countries as you're walking around the World Showcase.
And it makes it a whole different game of drinking around the world, huh? If you're playing Frogger along the way.
Can't drink around the world, Aaron, on New Year's Eve, because there are alcohol kiosks that are set up in every country on top of the kiosks that are already there. So there are additional beverages, additional food choices that are out in certain countries. And if you're trying to drink around the world, you'll make it probably to the American experience before, you know, you're done. So different logistics. I think Epcot was actually much more crowded, but that's because I think it has a larger footprint, can accommodate more people. And getting out of Epcot to the buses was, you know, a challenge, because after the fireworks, you know, everybody that has been in the park for 6, 8, 10, 12 hours is, they're ready to go home. And it's a mad rush to the buses, to the parking lots, to the monorails. Yes. But we were talking about logistics getting off the Magic Kingdom. When they do 360 fireworks, they close all monorail and boat traffic because they're shooting fireworks off from the resorts, and they're also shooting fireworks off from barges. So the pyrotechnics people have to safe those items before any of the guests are allowed in any vicinity. So we actually stood in line to get off the Magic Kingdom for about 45 minutes in the wilderness, because the boats were not allowed to run.
Yeah.
Until the barges were pulled to safety.
See, and that's an interesting point, because it's a sort of an extra challenge, because they run an extra fireworks show both the day before New Year's Eve and on New Year's Eve at the Magic Kingdom, just to try to help accommodate that crowd a bit. But you know, that you don't think about the fact that it's the boat across the lake is going to have to pause for both the early show and the late show.
Yes. In fact, we actually had cast members tell us when we went there New Year's Eve that come to the Magic Kingdom that night and actually go to Epcot the other night, because transportation off the Magic Kingdom on New Year's Eve, since the Magic Kingdom now closes at 1 o'clock, you could expect, if you stayed on the Magic Kingdom till closure at 1 o'clock, to be here probably till 1:30, 1:45 before you'd either get to your car or get to your resort. They said it would be a very long time.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Now, the only other question then is, at what point did you start kicking yourself for not setting your resorts up the other direction, so that you could have walked out of Epcot back to your resort at Beach Club on New Year's Eve?
Yes, that would have been wonderful. But actually, the bus traffic, once you actually made it to the bus terminal, I think we were on the second bus. The majority of the traffic, it looked like at Epcot, was walk-up drive-in, and that may have been because Magic Kingdom hit capacity at 10:30 in the morning that day.
Oh, sure.
And it was my wife and I, because we did not bring our kids to New Year's Eve, even though they probably would have enjoyed it. They're of age that they probably would have enjoyed it. They're 14 and 12. But we felt, you know, for our enjoyment, we wouldn't want to be chasing around and knowing the crowds were going to be there. We saw a tremendous amount of young kids, 10 and under.
Yeah.
I would say probably made up 20 to 30% of the crowd. And it really surprised us. People pushing around strollers at midnight.
Yeah. You know, I think people, you know, that it's part of the plan. It's a milestone thing that they've got, and it's just, it's going to happen. And by force of will, they make it happen. And I don't understand it. I mean, I don't. I always figure you want to roll with what the kids, you know, behavior tells you they need. But
yeah,
everybody does their own thing. And for some people, that's their thing.
In fact, for our podcast here, for our Tripcast, I will have to email you a picture of people actually sleeping on the ground at Epcot, because they've been there for so long waiting for these fireworks at midnight. I mean, and the wildest part was, is they thought they had staked out the perfect real estate to watch the Illumination special fireworks. And then as 10 minutes to firework launch, the cast members come around and made everybody stand up anyways to accommodate as many people as possible.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So their perfect space was no longer their perfect space. And a lot of grumpy people when that occurred, unfortunately.
Right. So here's the then where we, I think we go from here. So that was the big New Year's Eve celebration. Sounds like you really kind of got all the highlights. You got both of the great, you know, both of the fireworks shows that get all the attention. I mean, I'll get a chance to talk to somebody who saw the Hollywood Studios fireworks, because I know that there are some people, for example, who swear by Hollywood Studios' version of the 4th of July fireworks. So I'm curious to hear what they have to say about New Year's there. But in any case, you got both of the big fireworks shows, got to do an adults-only night for New Year's Eve. That sounds great. So let's talk a little more about first of all, go back and pick up those Boulder Ridge villas. You know, they got a pretty significant refurbishment during the work done at Wilderness Lodge. You know, they expanded the DVC there and added a whole new section to DVC. What did you think of the refurbished rooms at Boulder Ridge?
The refurbished rooms, we had a studio. My wife and I had a studio, and my kids and my mother and father actually had a one bedroom. And our studio actually was easier to sleep five people than the one bedroom.
Yeah, you know, this is one of my great tips for people, great tricks, right? The deluxe studios at Wilderness Lodge, official capacity is five.
Yes,
the official capacity of a one bedroom is four.
Correct. And they had to bring them up an air mattress, whereas we had a Murphy bed that pulled down out of our TV type council area.
Yep.
And it was the refurbished rooms actually were really nice. Obviously, square footage is still the same as before. New linens, new, you know, the Murphy bed was a great addition. It makes the staying at a studio, if you have a family of five, actually feasible. I mean, it'd be tight if you're spending any more than, you know,
sure,
any more than a few days there, you'd probably, you know, if you're only sleeping there, then it'd be fine. But anything past that would be a little tight.
Sure. So you liked the new rooms. Let's then talk about the transition piece, because it's okay. The thing that I think is important about those split stays that we don't always spend enough time with. You have the first part of your vacation over at Wilderness Lodge. At some point, right. You're going to need to move over to Beach Club. So how did you manage that shift?
Actually, the shift was relatively easy. But before we go to the shift, maybe we should talk about the new pool, the new DVC pool as well.
Please do, yes.
And they also have a new quick service restaurant at Wilderness as well.
Okay.
Which, and a bar and brand new bar outside as well, Geyser Point, I believe it is.
Yes.
Extremely varied menu, very good drinks. As far as quick services go, I would put it probably in my top one or two outside the park quick services, just because the menu was varied. It's quick service to order. So nothing is made up until you get it. You can actually have the quick service delivered if you're sitting at the lounge. They will actually bring it over to you in the lounge
while you're
sitting there. And the pool area is completely redone. If any of your listeners remember the old Wilderness Villas pool, it's kind of like going to an apartment pool. It was very small.
Kind of an old-fashioned, you know, I used to think of it as the cement pond.
Well, it is now a zero-entry pool. It is about three times the size, has a hot tub that probably will accommodate probably 10 to 15 guests. It is themed like a logging type, you know, old Western logging, Pacific Northwest logging village.
Very nice.
So yeah, they made significant improvements to the Wilderness Villas, the DVC Villas there.
That sounds great.
Now our transition over to the Beach Club actually was really easy because as we were walking out with our luggage, we ran into the concierge that's assigned to the Wilderness Villas. Apparently, this is something newer, where in the villas, there's a concierge there during normal business hours.
Very cool.
He basically had us sit down for us. It took us maybe 10 minutes. He assigned us a room, even though it wasn't ready. So we knew our room number right away through him.
Let's make sure people understand. You're still at Wilderness Lodge, and what he has done is gotten into the system and gone ahead and taken care of your room assignment at Beach Club.
Absolutely, and was actually going through, and it sounded like he was picking and choosing what room we could go to based on the profile that we had used our points for, which was one-bedroom villa.
Right.
So he even said, hey, I made sure you got a really nice villa. And it actually was an exceptional villa because it was close to everything.
Awesome.
But we just walked down and it just was happenstance that we ran into him. We fully expected that we would transfer resorts like we've always transferred resorts, where we take our luggage to Bell Services, put the transfer tags on them, and then go into the parks and wait for my Disney experience to tell us that our room was ready and what room we would have, and then come back to the beach club and move into our room. And in this case, we knew what room we already had, and it was just a slightly different wrinkle this time, and it actually was really good. I thought the concierge was really, really good. He also checked us out of our room at Wilderness and everything else, and really made the transfer pretty seamless. And it sounds like this is something new they've offered into the DVC villas.
Yeah, it does sound new. And seems to me that this is just a really smart move by the folks who run accommodations, who run the hotels at Disney, who recognize that when they expanded DVC's footprint there at Wilderness Lodge, they've created a bit of an issue in terms of staff coverage. And this is a really easy way to take what can be a stressful and staff time-consuming issue and streamline it and make it more efficient, because by assigning a concierge to just that area to handle this kind of stuff, what it does is keep people who have issues that are routine for that concierge, for a DVC concierge, but might be unusual and time consuming for the regular hotel concierge to handle. And so everybody gets their work done more efficiently. I love it.
Yeah, we were very happy with it.
So that's great. So you had a nice smooth transition across to Beach Club. You said you got a great room assignment there, because that's one of the issues I think sometimes people have. They're, everybody wants to go to Beach Club because it's that close walking distance to Epcot, unless you're at the end of one of those hallways.
Yes. And then you've got to walk on the very long, dark sidewalks to get to the International Gateway. Which one sidewalk takes you to just the road and not to the International Gateway. But yes, we actually were in room 120, which is right as you walk into the breezeway of the main villa building. It literally is the first villa off of the entrance. So it was conveniently located to the pool, conveniently located to the sidewalk to walk to the International Gateway. And it was relatively conveniently located to the main Beach Club building down towards the marketplace and walking through that way as well.
Yeah, that's a almost perfect place. Like, you couldn't have picked better.
Right.
And now I'm trying to remember, because I know that they had done some work at Beach Club. Did that include the villas over on that side?
No, it doesn't. Because we stay at the Beach Club, about once a year.
Okay.
And the villas really hadn't been updated. The only reason we like the Beach Club, one of the reasons we like the Beach Club, is they have USB ports everywhere for electronics to plug in, whereas Wilderness and some of the other villas, just DVC villas, do not. And uh-huh. You have to bring your charging ports. But no, it doesn't look like they have been updated.
Interesting. Because the other side is, so I'm guessing that Beach Club may get taken care of soon, because I can't imagine they're going to let it lag too long behind the updates to Yacht Club.
So yeah, we still had like a carpet on the floor. We still had, with the Yacht Club being updated and with the boardwalk being updated, I would assume eventually they would get to the Beach Club.
Right. Talk about the room. I mean, you went from a brand new, recently renovated space to one that's maybe a little older, but a great location. Was the room still in good condition and still, work for you well?
Yeah, we had a few little minor issues. But we called Disney engineering, and they came right out that day. In fact, when we were out in Epcot, they came out, fixed the two or three minor issues that we had. And we didn't have any issues with it for the rest of our stay. I mean, they literally were simple things, like the dryer would not stay shut when we were running it. Or the shower door, some of the weather stripping on the shower door had caused it. So the door was difficult to close, and the telephone actually in the living room area didn't work, but the one in the bedroom area did work. So, I mean, the minor issues that I'm sure have been occurring for some time, probably in that room, and other guests just overlooked it because they're relatively small and minor issues. So nothing serious.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's also, it's a matter of, to some extent, you know, those resorts are under such pressure during that time frame, right? Coming right out of the holidays, they've been at full capacity for a good solid month by then, pretty much.
Oh, yes.
You know, those little kinds of things are just going to pop up just from use, you know, at a certain point, because there isn't time to do the kind of maintenance checks you would normally do on a regular basis when they're that heavily occupied.
No, they were turning rooms as fast as possible.
Yeah.
In fact, that was one thing that we had noticed when we were checking out both days, both at Wilderness and at the Beach Club. We got knocks on our door at 8 a.m. on checkout day asking if we were ready so they could come in and start making the room already.
Oh, wow.
And that seemed to be consistent when I'm talking to other friends and families that we were down there at the same time. They all experienced very similar results. Was at a very early in the morning knock, 8 or 9 a.m., when checkout is until 11 o'clock to see if you are out of the room already.
Okay.
To try to turn the rooms as quickly as possible.
Right. So makes sense. I mean, they're trying to keep up with the crowd. They're trying to move them over. I think we've done a good overview of resorts. Let's talk parks. I mean, the parks were pretty crazy while you were there. The crowds were heavy. So I always like to hear about how people, especially people who are veterans, who know this stuff, who know these parks, how you handle and adjust to your touring when the crowds are so heavy. So why don't we start over at Magic Kingdom, since that's where you were closest to, and just talk about some of the highlights of Magic Kingdom while you were there, and maybe, you know, how you handled the parks or the crowd situation.
It really was the perfect storm. Is a good way to put it. You had incoming marathon week. You had New Year's Eve. You had the first official weekend that Florida residents with the cheaper annual pass with blackout dates were able to come. And Florida students were still on break. So it was the perfect storm for a massive crowd.
Yeah.
How do we do it? Fast passes. Luckily, my wife is on the fast pass system. She knows that she can make them 60 days in advance with a hotel reservation. And so at her 60-day window, you know, we kind of plan out a few rides that we want to do. We try to make our park stays shorter because of the crowds, just because they are so we'll only spend maybe 3 or 4 hours at a park instead of, you know, 6 to 8 hours.
Sure.
And when we go to eat a meal, we won't eat on park necessarily. We will go to one of the resorts, or to like the boardwalk, or somewhere like there, somewhere off the park property itself.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, because we're annual pass holders and we go to Disney probably 3 to 4 times a year. So it's, we don't feel the urgency to make sure that we get everything in. We have our priority rides that we want to do, priority things that we want to do. You know, like my wife is always, she wants to see Merida. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is. If we are in the Magic Kingdom and the line is not too long, we are going to see Merida, and that's just the end of it.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's always a given. We always have to do that. When we have the kids with us, we would like to do Space Mountain. But we will also, if we're walking around and we see a line that is relatively short, we'll just go and stand by. But relatively short for us is about 20 minutes or shorter, and it's very crowded like this. The only one that was 20 minutes, was the carousel, and that was only at one time. I mean, so that tells you how crowded the park was.
Yes,
it was very crowded.
Yes, it does. Well, so clearly, you know, this is where I think the whole FastPass Plus system really kind of shines, because it's true that it's somewhat limiting because you only got to pull three or whatever. But the reality is that on a day like this, in the days of paper FastPass, you know, first of all, you probably weren't going to get many more than three anyway. And even if you did, when you went and pulled that pass, you know, it might be 4 hours before you got to use it, because the times were randomly assigned, or not randomly, but, you know, it was next down the line kind of thing, instead of getting to choose when you wanted to be there.
Absolutely. And in fact, for some of the more popular rides, if you didn't get those fast passes at, say, 9 or 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning, you wouldn't get them at all.
Sure.
You know, Space Mountain, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, if they were there for the part for the paper passes, you wouldn't get them because they are such popular rides.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So setting priorities, you did the things that were important to you. What experiences in Magic Kingdom really stood out on this trip? Maybe in either way, you know, either a particularly good experience, particularly bad, but something that stood out.
Oh, we always like just, you know, when it's just my wife and I, you know, an adults only type situation, we just take it easy. The castle and the holiday features on Main Street were still up. They had the Christmas tree still up. The castle at night was lit up with all the icicle lights. It's absolutely beautiful. And that is something that everybody that is a fan of Walt Disney World at one time in their life needs to go down during holiday season to the Magic Kingdom and the resorts, and especially see the Magic Kingdom and see the castle lit up the way it is, because it is absolutely awe-inspiring.
Yeah, it really is beautiful. And I love, did you manage to get there for the actual, you know, flipping the switch ceremony they do each day?
No.
It you know, it's cheesy, but it's cool. It just is cool to see those lights pop up, the icicle lights and the reflection in the lagoon there around the castle. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's, you know, Magic Kingdom and look, Magic Kingdom is always the most popular park, and it's always especially the most popular park at holiday time, because you got those day guests and that's what they're there to do, right? Is just to stop in with their kids for the, you know, to experience the holiday season in the Magic Kingdom.
Right.
So I know that the crowd's always the most intense there. What was the crowd like? Did you spend any time at Hollywood Studios?
The only time actually we spent at Hollywood Studios is when we ran through it. So actually we did not even step foot in Hollywood Studios this trip. And we were talking about that when we were actually on the plane coming out. We were really surprised that, you know, we skipped the park entirely this time.
Yeah. Even though you were staying just the other side, huh?
Yeah. In fact, one day we actually went and walked up the sidewalk from the beach club, all the way down to Hollywood Studios, and we're annual pass holders. It's like, I thought, oh, maybe we'll just walk in. And instead, the wife's like, yeah, let's go back. And we just turned around and went back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So no love for the studios on this trip. Are you excited for expansions to come there, or is it just not your park?
Oh, no. We actually really like the studios. It's just one of those things with everything going on and all the different activities that we had with the fact that Marathon weekend, New Year's Eve, the Diz Dads convention that was in Orlando at the weekend, and at Saratoga, we just ran out of time. I mean, honestly, an 11-day stay to say I ran out of time and couldn't do an entire park is really odd to say, but we just ran out of time.
All right. Well, I can see that. I mean, and that's one of the things about the holiday season, right? Is that it's a trade-off, and you had more time, but you used the time differently as well. You kind of took things slow and stretched things out because that's a way to manage being around those crowds.
Oh yeah. And they were significant and anybody that's driving to the Magic Kingdom for the next several months is going to run into delays at the main gate to get through the gate because of the construction. I mean, there's construction everywhere right now at Magic Kingdom. Everywhere you look, there is construction or there are walls up, you know, pardon our dust walls.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's hard too, especially I think that's when the crowds are really big, that construction at Hollywood Studios is especially problematic because they still have that walkway that runs kind of, it used to run behind Pixar Place kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, that's still closed off. And it just creates a very difficult situation. That used to be kind of the release valve for crowds. And with that closed, it's just really difficult to get back and forth across that park.
Right. And they're getting ready actually to close the walkway from the Swan Dolphin Beach Club area from Crescent Lake to Hollywood Studios. In about another 3 weeks to a month, they're going to close that sidewalk.
Oh, wow.
So there won't be any walking access to the park for the time being because of all of the construction that they're doing.
Okay. So that's the studios, not much time spent there. So let's instead maybe talk a little bit about Epcot. You were there for New Year's Eve fireworks, but did you spend other time there?
Oh, yes, we did. The morning of a few of the races, after the races, we would actually walk through Epcot to go back to the beach club. We actually made rope drop for Epcot one morning, which was a unique experience. They had a little bit of entertainment at rope drop, and then to watch people kind of run as fast as they can to Soaring or to Test Track to be kind of like the first group on there. And we actually walked quickly to Soaring and walked right on, and actually did a quick ride before we walked back to our room. We also came in many a time just to walk around the International Gateway and walk through the International Gateway and walk around the World Showcase, where we just kind of just hang out, stroll, get a snack here or there, get a drink, meet different Diz Dads back in the back of the park and just enjoy ourselves.
Sure, sure. And, you know, was there anything in particular about this visit to Epcot that stands out, either dining experience, an attraction, an encounter with somebody that just really sticks out in your mind?
Honestly, it's Epcot and it's the World Showcase. I mean, it is a lot of fun. It is all what you make it. I mean, when you can take it easy, I think it's a lot easier when you don't have to try to, oh, we have to go here and we have to go there. You know, okay, hey, we got here, great. And then we kind of move on. We had some excellent cast members the morning that we were there for rope drop. We were still in our, we were dressed 10K. So I was dressed as Maui and my wife was Moana. And it is the only time during marathon weekend, during the Disney races, that you can actually walk into the parks as an adult in costume.
Right, right.
And that was probably the most unique experience I have ever had. I had little kids coming up to me telling me I was Maui. We walked in and did a character experience with Goofy, Mickey, and Minnie because there was no wait as we were walking through. So we're like, why not?
Sure.
And the characters probably spent 15 to 20 minutes playing, literally playing with us. They took my hook.
Oh,
Goofy
awesome.
Was hanging the hook on Minnie. Minnie was strutting it like she was on the, you know, the fashion walks. Mickey was kind of blushing and just, you know, it was just a lot of fun. The PhotoPass cast members, everybody was having a good time. Minnie had us get into photo poses with her, you know, where we're wayfarers and everything else. I mean, it was really, that was a truly magical character experience. That was just completely, you know, because we were still in our, you know, our costumes from the race that
right,
day.
Right.
I mean, it was just one of those things. And we actually did that for the Magic Kingdom one day too, because we had to go see Merida when we were dressed as Merida and one of her suitors. But the characters stops were phenomenal on race day. Absolutely. That sticks out. That stands out completely.
That is great. You're going to have to share some pictures so that we can include those with the podcast here so people can see and, you know, get the full picture of what you were up to. Now, while we're on the subject of Diz Dad meetups and running into people, you know, why don't you talk about the places where you caught up with the Diz Dads Club convention? Because I think if I remember correctly, you caught up a couple of different occasions.
We caught up in the World Showcase at Beer Garden. They had meals set up pretty much Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And with the race schedule, we couldn't attend a whole lot of them. Some of them we actually fell asleep accidentally through. We really wanted to attend, but we did attend Beer Garden with them. We did attend the barbecue at Saratoga Springs. We actually were able to transfer some fast passes that we weren't going to use to some of the guys that had come down. That was an interesting experience and how to make that work. We missed the old system where I could just hand them my magic bands and they could go ride the rides and hand them back. But we made it work because we had some flight of passage fast passes that my kids were not going to use because they were with their grandparents at the time and not on property.
Oh, that's nice. Nice to be able to share like that.
But I mean, it was a good time. You've been to the convention, and anybody that's not been to the convention, I would suggest going because it's a really fun time. A lot of good fellowship, meeting friends that you may have talked to online for a year or 2 years, and you kind of get together and you share not just all things Disney, but just life and good times in general.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's what I like so much about Diz Dad's Club Convention is that it ends up making at least those parts of the Disney vacation totally different than Disney vacation, right?
I mean, correct.
It's still, you're still at Disney, you're still in that atmosphere, but you're just hanging out with good friends, having a good time with good friends, and it happens to be in a place that you all really love to be, which yes. happens to be Disney World.
Yes. Like I intentionally, because we were running the races, I stayed away from Trader Sam's.
Yeah, that can be dangerous.
Yes, it was. And it was dangerous. They took pictures of one of their tabs, and that was a very dangerous experience. But when you bring the Canadian drinking team in, and some of the ones from, they know how to put down a few Nautili and some of the more popular drinks.
Yes, some more exotic versions.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, we met them up quite a few different times. Actually, a big shout out goes to Joe on our last day. He tried to run into every family that he could.
Yeah.
He went to Animal Kingdom and saw, I believe, the Gilberts. He saw Tim Beloyne and his family and went and tried to go to every park that some people were at with their kids and at least stopped in and said hello. And that was, I mean, that was incredible because he must have done all four parks probably in the course of 3 to 4 hours. And he was driving his own car.
Any dining experiences that stood out on this particular trip?
I would say probably after we finished the marathon, we went to Beaches and Cream. Actually, the cast member got us in to some counter, to sit at the counter. We only maybe had a 30 to 40 minute wait. For your listeners that don't know, Beaches and Cream only has 10 tables that are available for dining reservation. It is absolutely tiny. It used to be just a walk-in restaurant only, and they opened it up about probably a year, year and a half ago, maybe, to dining reservations. Well, dining reservations are next to impossible to get there. They only have,
and you know, I can't decide which one is the worst situation because I get why they moved to the reservations. I mean, yeah, the walk-ups gave everybody the chance, but the reality was that there were still the same number of people dining. They still turned the tables the same number of times. It just meant that there were people standing in line for hours.
Yes, and if the weather was nicer this 10-day trip, I would say you probably would have had the people because I know when we've been there in the summer, the standing line is about an hour to an hour and a half sometimes. But the cast member was wonderful. We had talked to her multiple times throughout the week of our stay. You know, it was the same one every time. And she was just like, yeah, you're just going to have to the day of it. Just come on down and we'll see what we can do. It'll probably be a little bit. And they accommodated our party about 45 minutes. And just because we had to go experience the kitchen sink, which if any of your listeners want to have a lot of fun and you've got a party of greater than four people, just and you like ice cream, go ahead and do it because it's a really unique experience how the whole restaurant participates in the unveiling of this giant, you know, 10 scoop sundae that they bring out to you.
Yeah, yeah, it is fun. It's always you know, it's like a little show on its own.
And plus, you know, all the food is cooked to order. It's diner style. It's cooked literally right in front of you on this grill.
They make a good burger. Bottom line, they make a really good burger.
They make an excellent burger. Everything's there is good. My daughter doesn't eat cheeseburgers. And so she looked at the line cook that was there and says, I don't eat cheeseburgers, you know, but do you have chicken nuggets? And I've got chicken nuggets are not on the menu there. And lo and behold, you know, they're just talking back and forth to our waiter. And the assistant line cook shows back up, and she's got a giant frozen bag of chicken nuggets that she went next door to, I think, the captain's grill and brought them out. And they fried them right there on the spot for her. I mean, just a little bit of Disney magic there. It's not on the menu, but they still accommodated her.
Yeah. No, I love how they do that. And I mean, look, the reality is that they share storerooms with other restaurants there at Beach Club. So it was probably really yep. easy for them to do it, but they didn't have to, and they did.
Right.
And so, you know, it made her experience that much better.
And my, our other dining experience that at the Beach Club area, and I'm going to give this away and I may shoot myself in the foot because it's kind of our little quiet little Disney place. It is the Crew Quarter that is right next to the Yachtsman Steakhouse. It is a little, maybe 8 to 10 table bar lounge area.
Right.
But they have since changed where they're cooking and preparing all their food.
Yeah, this was a great little bit of serendipity here, because Cruise Cup used to be sharing with Captain's Grill, but then correct. When it switched out and they brought in the new, what do they call it? Is it the Compass?
The Ale and Compass.
Ale and Compass. When they opened Ale and Compass, they kind of reconfigured a little bit. So and now...
they share the Yachtsman's Kitchen. And not only do they share the Yachtsman's Kitchen, but the Yachtsman's maitre d', if the Yachtsman's not busy, will actually be coming over and will be filling drink orders and running food from the kitchen and everything else. It is a really unique experience. The waitstaff in Cruise Cup have been there. I think the one waitress we had was the same one we had 2 years ago, Aaron, when we were there with you.
Oh, right, right.
She has been there for 14 or 15 years, which is as long as the building's been there, I think. So the menu is very limited. There's only, I believe, 8 items on it, but they are all excellent. I would recommend the cheese dip. It is a Machigo cheese dip. It's most unique appetizer we have had at, you know, almost all of Disney World, because it is just a really flavorful dish. The beef dishes are all prepared in Yachtsman, so they're cooked over a wood fire.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Which, yes, so you're getting a lounge-priced meal.
But you're getting a signature dining preparation.
Exactly. You can actually get the Yachtsman prime rib in the Crew Cup right now. And I think it was $33, the same meal at the Yachtsman, $65.
Wow.
I mean, and you know, it's coming off the same cut of beef that they've got over at the Yachtsman Steakhouse.
Yeah,
absolutely. You can even get the Yachtsman bread and the Yachtsman soup.
Very nice.
I mean, so it's kind of our little.
I already liked the Cruise Cup, and now I like it more.
That's kind of like our little home away from home. They've got a great drink menu.
Yep.
As well, and it's real quiet. Nobody kind of knows it's there because usually the door is closed.
Mm, yeah, often it is.
And you just kind of slip in, and if you can't get a table, you can sit at one, either at the bar, or you can sit. They've got some chairs around, these real low top tables,
yep.
kind of lounge type chairs. And it just is a it's one of the hidden secrets, I think, of the entire Yacht Beach Club complex.
Yeah. Oh, and they've got a really nice bourbon flight.
Yes, they do.
And everybody knows I love a flight. So the last thing really, you know, Disney World wise, we haven't talked about is Animal Kingdom. And I kind of saved it for last because I know that that's still sort of the newest thing going at Walt Disney World these days is the new Pandora stuff. And I know you spent some time there checking things out. So talk a little bit about, you know, your experience of Animal Kingdom during this trip and kind of what things stood out. Had you done much touring around Pandora before this trip?
We actually had opportunities to tour Pandora about a week after it opened to the public. Have been there also in the summer. It is one of our, I would say Flight of Passage is probably our favorite family ride to go on at the entire property right now. It is one of those that every time we ride it, it's like, oh, we want to go again. And sure. We want to go again, and we want to go again. it's one of those, but it's also, it has made Animal Kingdom a destination park, a signature park where everybody feels they have to go there now. The crowds, even on non-crowded days, Animal Kingdom is very crowded. Actually, one day when we actually drove our car to Animal Kingdom, because we were stretched for time and didn't take the bus, We showed up, I think, at 4:30, and the parking lot was almost at capacity. So tremendous amount of crowds right now going to the Animal Kingdom. I would say there's probably Magic Kingdom than Animal Kingdom for crowd wise.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I great for Animal Kingdom, you know, it's great that it's now, it's not a half day park anymore, right? People used to call it that. It just isn't.
It is a full day park, and Animal Kingdom at night, if there's listeners out there that haven't gone and experienced Animal Kingdom at night, it is a different park. There is entertainment out that is not out during the day. The nighttime safari is a really unique experience. The animals seem to be, in the summer, the animals are much more active because it's cooler. In the wintertime, the animals were somewhat active. Some of the nocturnal animals were very active. But, you know, it is just a different experience with a different kind of cast experience where it's a different storyline than the normal safari storyline. Pandora at night is different, is the only way to describe it. It is actually different now than it was when it first opened. There's a lot more ambient light back there at the moment. And I wonder if they had to do that because of safety reasons. They replaced a lot of their black lights with regular visible light.
Right, right.
Lighting.
Yeah, they did adjust it somewhat because I think it was just too low there for a while.
Oh, it was extremely dark when they just had the black lights.
Yeah, and I think there were complaints. I mean, people were tripping, and you can't have that richly themed environment with textured sidewalks and things and also have no light.
But I personally loved it when it was all the black lights because then the beauty of it really exploded. But it is an extremely rich environment. It's probably one of Disney's best themed areas.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gorgeous. And I love that they really did, you know, seriously upgrade, not just opening this new area, but they brought in, you know, upgraded dining experiences. They've done a good job of finding better ways to manage the crowds for Rivers of Light with both Fast Pass and dining package options. I mean, they really did, I think, a nice job. And I'm hoping that is a bit of a preview of a smooth expansion over at Hollywood Studios too.
I truly hope so. I think they've learned some of their lessons from Avatar. I don't think they realized it was going to be as popular for as long as it's kind of held its popularity.
Yeah.
Because for the guests that have already been there, it is not a very big area. It looks bigger than it actually is.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of forced perspective, right?
Yes, that's true. That's true. It's the only place in Animal Kingdom. You don't know you're at Animal Kingdom when you walk in there, because all the signs disappear for Animal Kingdom and you can't see the rest of the park. So I wonder if they're going to do the same thing with the Hollywood Studios expansions to where you can't see the rest of the park.
Right. Good point. It's a good question. It'd be interesting to see. All right. Well, I think we're kind of getting to our usual wrap-up point here. And we have a couple of questions we ask always at the end of a report. And the first one is, you know, 5 years from now, and this is, I think, sometimes a difficult question for folks who visit frequently, but, you know, 5 years down the road from now, when you think back, what's going to be the moment from this trip that's the one that sticks in your head, the one that says, you know, New Year's Eve 2018?
I would say the moment that we have was probably when we hit Epcot on the marathon. And I know we didn't talk a lot about the fact that we ran the marathons, but when we hit that point of it'll overshadow that moment there overshadows for us will overshadow, you know, the fireworks. The fireworks were absolutely incredible at both parks. And they are definitely, if you have an opportunity to experience them, to experience them. But coming around mile 25 in the entire World Showcase with probably 50,000 guests just cheering you on that don't even know you, it's surreal is the only way to describe it. I mean, it flat out is surreal to that moment where people are cheering you on just to cheer you on. It's absolutely unreal. So that's the one thing we will absolutely remember from this trip.
Okay. Okay. That's a great thing too. And I think people sometimes, you know, they forget about that marathon moment. you don't have to be running to get caught up in it. I mean, I don't run unless I'm getting chased. but more than once, you know, I've found myself along that route in Epcot, you know, near the finish line, and you do get caught up in it and just cheering the runners on and doing what you can to kind of give them that at least spiritual energy, right, to push across the finish line.
It's absolutely surreal. And I mean, the guests that aren't running the marathon, but the guests that are actually just attending the parks on the marathon day, I mean, they have to be commended, because Disney really is manipulating them in ways that they're not used to. They can't go to certain places. They can't walk certain ways. The walkways are very narrow. They have to stop here. They have to go here. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things that they can and can't do because of the races. And so they really, you know, the fact that they're all positive and happy, it was really impressive.
So let's now maybe turn to the other side of this, which is you're veteran travelers. You've done this a lot. So for somebody who maybe isn't as experienced with the parks and doesn't have as much, you know, background and everything, and who's saying, you know, we want to go and we hear all these great things about how beautiful it is for the holidays. So we're thinking maybe we could go over New Year's. So what's the one bit of advice you would have for somebody who doesn't come in with your background, but wants that New Year's Eve at Walt Disney World experience?
I would say be patient. The most thing, be patient and have realistic expectations. If you're going down there with your family, have realistic expectations as to the fact that you're not going to be able to ride a lot of rides. They're going to be long lines. They're going to be long lines for food, long lines for beverages, long lines for the rides, and to temper your expectations and just kind of soak in the moment, you know, because it may be only a one and done option. And if you're only going to the Magic Kingdom every, or to the parks and or the resorts in general, just once every couple of years, just you have to slow down and enjoy it, because if you try to do too much with the crowd situation the way it is, it just will lead to a miserable experience that I think everybody that's been to Disney has seen, you know, where dad is dragging the 3-year-old through because, my goodness, he's paid his money at the entry gate and he's got to go watch these fireworks. And this 3-year-old has been there since 9 o'clock in the morning. It's midnight and they're done. Yeah. And just kind of take it in and just kind of enjoy it. If you're there just with your spouse, you know, this is a time where you have to slow down. Because if you try to, well, I have to do this, then do this, then do this, it will take some advanced planning to do even some minor things at the parks. But you there's no chance. You have to slow down. You also cannot be claustrophobic around people, because there are a tremendous amount of people. People are going to bump into you. You are going to be standing for the fireworks shoulder to shoulder. When you're walking out of the park, you're going to be walking nice and slow, because you can't walk any faster, because you're going to walk over the person in front of you and the person behind you is going to run over you. So you have to be patient.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. I mean, it's about managing expectations, preparing and then being patient when you're there and not getting caught up in the stress of the crowd.
Yes. Cause if you let it will stress you out, because transportation to and from the Magic Kingdom on New Year's Eve weekend is difficult. Transportation to and from Epcot is a little bit more manageable, but it is difficult at best. Because the volume of people is just, it's the most people I've ever seen at the parks ever.
Yes, it is. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show and
thank you,
sharing your experience with us. It's always fun, and glad we got a chance to talk about it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes. What delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.